What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Badgers. John Garcia Jr. joins us. We're going to talk about upside for the 2024 star quarterback recruit that Wisconsin has verbally committed. Plus, how did the rest of the Big Ten West do in the transfer portal? We're going to talk about all of that and more with John Garcia Jr. Today's Locked On Badgers. Let's go.
You are Locked On Badgers, your daily podcast on the Wisconsin Badgers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is going on, my friends? Welcome to Locked On Badgers, your team every single day. I'm your host, Ryan Herrings. As always, really do appreciate everybody tuning in. We've got the man, John Garcia Jr. on Locked On's College Football Recruiting Insider. John, as always, thank you for joining. I really do appreciate it.
Yes, sir, Ryan. Good to be here.
So we talked, one of the things I want to jump right into is when Mabry Mottoyer, whose pronunciation I think I'm starting to get, committed to the Badgers. We talked a lot about, I went back and listened to what we talked about, right? We talked about how big it is to get the quarterback early. We talked about, oh my goodness, Phil Longo and, you know, the Luke Fickell, they're just crushing this. And we did talk about Mottoyer's game, but I wanted to go back and talk more specifically about his upside, because we covered a lot the first time we talked about him. What do you see in the 6'5", 220-pound kid out of Texas? What is his upside, his ceiling? Where are you at right now with Mottoyer?
Yeah, I really like him. You know, this is a guy who I think I met as a freshman, you know, his the spring after his freshman year out on the Elite 11 circuit. And, you know, this young, you know, everyone was calling him Trevor Lawrence because of the hair, right? Like, hey, Trevor Lawrence 2.0. And I'm watching this freshman sling and I'm like, this is a freshman, you know? So he's always had this great frame and physical tools, but he had just played, you know, a few snaps basically the season prior. So it was always about, hey, I know the physical foundation's here. What is it going to look like, though, when you're that guy on Friday nights at the Woodlands in Texas, in the Houston area, against that type of competition? And his sophomore season was great. You know, 66% completion percentage. The production was good. A bunch of rushing touchdowns. And then he upped it as a junior in more games, more efficient as a passer and a runner. So it's kind of all coming together for Mabry, because he's got such a physical foundation, such a cannon on his right arm, that it's almost about everything else. Can you take something off of these fastballs? Can you be more efficient as a runner? What is the RPO decision-making game looking like? So there's just not a lot of recruits that from their freshman season, we're talking about all the non-physical. It's always about, oh, he's getting bigger and stronger and faster and all these things. All of those boxes have long been checked for this Badger commitment. It's always been about everything else. And what I like about his upside is that he is becoming more efficient every single time he gets out there on the field. Because I think when you get into these Phil Longo, these spread offensive systems, everybody's sort of productive, right? So the numbers could kind of blur you a little bit, but are you becoming more efficient in your decision-making and that production simultaneously? And that answer is a resounding yes from Mottoyer. And I think that is a heck of a sign going into, and he's still got a year left, right? Going into his senior season of football. So the arm strength is still there. The running ability is absolutely there. The size is never going to go away. But in the margins, he's now taking those steps that everybody's been wanting him to take. And I think there's something to be said for that as well, because when you're called Trevor Lawrence 2.0, when people first see you, that's kind of a lot of pressure. And you're not quarterbacking in the middle of nowhere. No disrespect to Cole LeCrew, you're in Houston. You know, this is against big time competition every single Friday night with a heck of a microscope on every pass you make. So to kind of have lived up to it in this 2-year sample, I think says a lot about the kid in between the ears. So we get into the evaluation and it's a lot about those things. And that's where I like his upside, because if he's already started to check those unanswered boxes, I do think that it's a great sign going forward, especially when you talk about assimilating into a system like Longo's that's going to put so much on that QB1 at a high level. So I think he's kind of right where you want him to be at this stage. I certainly still think there's room to improve mechanically. I think, you know, he's got this cannon. Take something off of it, you know, go off speed a little bit. Can you be more efficient on the run as a passer, as opposed to maybe, you know, utilizing that great frame and speed to pick up yardage in chunks, maybe take less hits, all the things that that you want to see at a high level. I think that's the next step for Mottoyer to take. And I kind of think he will.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned take less hits. You can see some punishment on film that you definitely don't want your quarterback taking. That leads into decision-making process. You know, there's quarterbacks all the way through the NFL that never figure that out, running quarterbacks whose career...
Yeah, 26 ended. Rushing touchdowns. So, yeah, he's not waltzing in for a lot of those. Yeah.
No, he lowers the shoulder more, it's a dual-edged sword, right? You like seeing physicality, toughness, leadership, the get the yard at all cost mentality. I think that permeates to the rest of the team from a quarterback, but you also need your shoulder to throw the ball.
Right? Yes, that thing. Yes, you do need that to get the ball down the field again, especially in that type of offense that's going to demand so much. Even a simple – just think of a simple RPO where you're going to throw the football over the middle. Think of all the action that your shoulder is going through, right? You're carrying out a fake to a running back while a defensive end is crashing in on you, and simultaneously you're reading the second and third level of the defense to see if your primary receiver can get open in the hole. And if he does, you're probably pulling the ball out and throwing it from a lower arm angle than convention would suggest, you know, and that's all on your shoulder, all of it, the action, the pull and the throw. And that's just, you know, a 7-yard gain on first down that nobody cares about. So over time, you need to protect that as much as possible, even if you are this big physical specimen, because like you said, it is a double-edged sword. You could fall off a cliff essentially if you utilize that. I mean, look at Cam Newton in the NFL. I think Josh Allen's starting to see a little bit of that, where they're like, hey, let's slow down a little bit and throw the ball to these great receivers. There's kind of a line for every one of those guys, and I think that's important for him to keep in mind, even though he's able to do so in dominant fashion in high school. It adds up and kind of catches up to everybody.
Yeah, and RG3 is another poster child for some of that. Yeah. And then there's a ton of college quarterbacks that you can go back to and look at. I want to talk here. One of the reasons I wanted to have this conversation with you specifically about kind of the upside, the ceiling here, is everything we've talked about, the frame, the athletic ability, the big arm, doing it in a place with a lot of visibility. 247 as a high 3-star quarterback. The composite's right around 4-star when you average in 0-3 rivals. Very, very good prospect. None of this is meant to say, you know, that he needs to be much higher. But it feels like there's a disconnect somewhere for a fan looking at, or even someone watching the film. You see the highlight clips, you see the speed, the size, the league he's doing it in, the arm strength. It feels like the ranking should be higher for a kid like that out of Texas. And where are we missing?
I think, first of all, I do think there's time for that. This is the most critical offseason for quarterback evaluations, junior year going into senior season. So there's still a lot in front of him. But, I do understand maybe that curiosity from the Badger fan base. And I think it's those things in the margins, particularly in a camp setting, let's say, which, again, it's not the be-all, end-all and not the most important thing. But it's the time where you get the most sort of intimacy with watching a quarterback operate. And if you're at an Elite 11 regional, let's say, you're going to watch him make, I don't know, 80 throws from all these platforms and situations designed to make you look uncomfortable. And when you're known for arm strength, that can get away from you as events like that wear on. So the ball is not as tight. The mechanics start to wane a little bit. So as much high-end positivity as you get, there's maybe a lack of consistency that comes behind it because you're so big and so physical and so strong, honestly, with that right arm. So I do think it's a little bit of a lack of consistency in those settings, just as much as it is wanting to see a little bit more off speed and a little bit more kind of the complete route tree, as opposed to chucking it down the field or running, that you want to see from an evaluation standpoint. It's nitpicky, but that's the business, especially at that position, right? You know, in this day and age, it's not like the best quarterbacks aren't the ones that throw it 80 yards. They're the ones who can throw it 12 and on time. You know, that's really the next step and the next ask for Mabry. And I think, again, he's got everything in front of him to be able to start to check those nitpicky boxes, but he's still got to go out there and do it. I do think he's got the mentality to take that type of evaluation or criticism and work with it in stride without kind of being bitter and focused on the wrong things. And that's important as well.
And I'm sure you don't get many fan bases that ask, why isn't my quarterback rated higher? Or why isn't my receiver rated higher?
Only all of them. Yeah. Except for the number one. Yeah. Whoever's number one, they're good with it. Everyone else, Not so much.
Yeah. No, we're still very excited for it. It's just, it's always interesting to see where the rankings are for players and where it checks up, right? So that's great feedback as always from John. Coming up next, a conversation I've been wanting for a while. We just haven't been all fitted in. We're going to talk rest of the Big Ten West and how they've done in the transfer portal, how it kind of stacks up to Wisconsin, and get a bit of a feel for the season that's coming up pretty quickly, starting to ramp up spring practices here. So we're going to talk about that next with John Garcia Jr. But first, a quick break for our friends of the show over at FanDuel. FanDuel is America's number one sports book. It's our sports book, the official sports book of the NBA. Basketball, we're past the All-Star break, and it's the best time to do this. If you download the FanDuel app right now, you can qualify for your new customer for the no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 back. That's bonus bets back if you don't win. It's incredible, safe, secure, super easy to use on the app. And you can bet on everything from the money line, point scores, three-pointers drained, rebounds, assists. You can do same-game parlays, combine it all. Y'all know I talk about it all the time with FanDuel. I'm a Suns fan. Kevin Durant made his debut yesterday. The Slim Reaper looked silky smooth as always, pinging off Devin Booker. That's an NBA Finals team this year. I can feel it. That's where my FanDuel money is. It's not too late to jump on that bandwagon. Even if you're not a Suns fan, we're all a fan of making a little extra cash. Jump on the bandwagon. Do it with me. Durant looks great. Plus, again, same game parlays, easiest way, and get your payout immediately. FanDuel, don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NBA. When you're done, go check out Locked On College Basketball with Isaac Shade. Great show. All the latest college basketball news you need in one spot, like only Locked On Network can do it. Wherever you get YouTube or podcasts, Locked On College Basketball. All right, let's bring Mr. John Garcia Jr. back in. And John, as you can see, I have my business shirt on today. This is Siri talking about the rest
of the Big Ten. I didn't get the memo. My bad.
No, it's all good, man. I want to talk about the rest of the Big Ten West. We've talked obviously a lot about Wisconsin, what they've done in the portal, and we tend to get hyper-focused on that. Where, in your opinion, from a national standpoint, who else in the Big Ten West really killed it this cycle?
Yeah, obviously Nebraska. I think I think maybe in the entire Big Ten, not just the West, if you're looking at the best kind of combination of quality and quantity from a portal perspective, it's Wisconsin and Nebraska kind of back and forth. I think Wisconsin did a better job from a balance perspective in terms of hitting all the boxes and obviously quarterback. I mean, just crazy good, portal production coming in. But I think Nebraska defensively did a really nice job. All those Georgia transfers coming in. I think MJ Sherman's got a chance to be this kind of hybrid do-it-all pass rushing linebacker. I like Elijah Judy from Texas A&M as well. And then kind of the sleeper to me is Chief Borders coming in from Florida. I think he's a volume tackler, big physical, second level guy. So I really like kind of the overhaul Nebraska got into from a defensive perspective. Offensively, I think Wisconsin kind of blew him out of the water from a portal perspective. And there's more balance with the Badger class. But defensively, you got to like what Nebraska did. I think they probably brought in 6 or 7 day one starters through the portal defensively. And that's at any school, that's really hard to do in the Power Five.
Well, and they also, talk about players that were getting into at least either be day one starters or competing for that spot. They hit the quarterback position as well. Let's go there because they're not alone in hitting the quarterback position in the Big Ten West. What's another school that maybe you thought did really well or at least landed somebody that is going to be a pain in the Badgers' butt this year?
Yeah, I like the Iowa combination of Cade McNamara and Eric All, that continuity coming over from Michigan. There's this kind of collective chip on the shoulder offensively from Cade and Iowa that I do think is going to – it can't get much worse, right? So it's got to push in the right direction offensively. It's not going to be the overhaul and the contrast of what Wisconsin is going to do from an offensive perspective. But I do think with the pieces that Iowa has in place, offensive line and running wise, they're going to be able to open up a little bit more for McNamara. When you transfer within the Big Ten, you've got to have some cojones, as we say in Spanish. You got to have some you-know-whats to make that move because there's a lot of familiarity, right? And you're going against, theoretically, your school and a bunch of others that know kind of the ins and outs of your game. So I think there's a lot at stake for Cade. And I like those situations. When there's a lot at stake, I think guys generally rise to the occasion. Look at it like an Adrian Martinez last year. Mm-hmm. Leaving Nebraska, going to K-State. Who saw that coming, that type of coming of age for Adrian? But again, everything was kind of at stake for him. You know, this was his last shot. So I like that aspect of Cade McNamara. And my sleeper quarterback kind of deal, well, Hudson Card, I love. I love him as a player. I love the fit with Graham Harrell at Purdue. But my sleeper quarterback, I think everybody likes Hudson Card in that situation. My sleeper is Luke Altmyer. You know, a guy coming from SEC country at Ole Miss. I think when all of his transfer prospects were starting to pick up, I think Tommy DeVito was still the guy at Illinois. So I was kind of like, well, why is Luke going to go there? But of course, DeVito then hit the portal and left as well. And I was like, oh, that's why. So I do like Altmyer's fit there a little bit better. I think obviously Illinois is not going to be able to rely on the run game as much as they did in 2022. So I think they're going to open it up just a little bit more and utilize, you know, some of those bigger physical wide receivers that they already have and that they're also bringing in their own right. So I think they're going to be a little bit more of a balanced team where it's not, hey, we play great defense and here's the offense to complement it. No, it'll be a little bit more 50-50 with Illinois. But yeah, quarterback is one of those spots that the whole division kind of overhauled through the portal. And most of those guys are going to be expected to be starters. So even though your Iowas, your Purdues, your Illinois don't have the volume that Nebraska and Wisconsin are bringing in through the portal in the West, you're still going to feel that portal impact because they're probably going to be QB1 changes there that are kind of all or nothing gambles, really, for both parties, program and player. And those are situations that I'm a big fan of because there's a sense that it's kind of got to work, especially when you think of Iowa in particular, of all these schools, it kind of has to work between the Ferentzes, and McNamara. So I tend to think it will.
Let me ask you that, because there's a couple quick questions I want to segue off of here from what you said. The first one is, again, I'm a Big Ten guy. I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush, but in general, Wisconsin fans had a little chuckle at the Iowa coaching staff remaining in place.
Sure.
From a national standpoint, I'm sure you talk about this more with the Locked On Iowa show, but just from a national standpoint, how is that surprising to you that stayed in place, that there wasn't a major change? I know there's family dynamics obviously in play there, but still.
Yeah, I still was surprised. I will say, though, the everything happening so quickly with McNamara was kind of the tell that, hey, this thing was going to stay in place and everybody was going to kind of bet on him in particular. So the timing of it was a bit of a hint and a strong indicator. But overall, of course, I mean, you were talking about betting earlier. I mean, there were some very funny Iowa bets. I saw a story about it during the season. There were bets. Think about college football in 2022 at the time. Pass first game, even in the Big Ten, right, for the most part. There were bets for the QB to throw for like 140 yards. I mean, it was unbelievable. It's just not something that you would ever even consider even years prior, much less in this day and age. So it was such low hanging fruit that it was either going to be a disaster and this break up the family dynamic and blow it all up kind of move, or you stay put and change personnel and blame it on the young guys. And that's kind of the way that old Kirk had it go down at Iowa. And look, he's been around longer than you or I in this game. And he's been able to kind of reinvent himself when his back is against the wall. But I do think patience is running thin. So that's kind of why I like Cade's dynamic. It's not only all or nothing for him as a quarterback. It feels like that Iowa program is kind of on hinge, right? Because when we first started coming on, Ryan, on Locked On Badgers, it was like, who's the comparable program to Wisconsin? Well, it was kind of Iowa. But look at the overhaul we've talked about for the last 6 months or so at Wisconsin. It feels like something like that will have to be the theoretical next step for Iowa if this iteration doesn't work out, because nobody's getting any younger. And even those loyal fans and all the great traditions there, even their patience will run thin with a legend. Let's be honest, with a legend, sitting in the building. We've seen it happen across college football. Mack Brown at Texas, Bobby Bowden at Florida State, Joe Paterno, even before the off-field scandal stuff, there was people wanting to see that turnover. People get really impatient in this great sport. So I think it's now or never for Iowa in a lot of ways. So I've got special attention on McNamara's journey in particular.
Well, and there's very much a sense of keeping up with your neighbors, the Joneses as well, not just in college football and life, but you, if you're an Iowa fan and you stand pat and, like you mentioned, dot, 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 you see what Wisconsin did, what Nebraska potentially did. Like, it's hard to remain patient in the course if you don't see immediate changes, right?
Especially, yeah, it's human nature, right? It's like, what about us?
Right.
What about us? When can we make those kind of fun, splashy? When can we win an offseason? When's the last time Iowa won an offseason, right? It doesn't always translate to wins, but it's kind of nice, though, right? It's kind of nice to win the offseason like what Wisconsin has.
No, and listen, to your point, though, Nebraska has won the Big Ten West offseason for like 5 years in a row.
It's happened before, yes.
So, that's true. So there is, listen, and I've said this all the time on the Badger show, too, and then we're going to take a quick break and talk one more quick segment with John Garcia. But, you know, Luke Fickell has won the offseason. He's won the honeymoon season. It still has to translate, and that's TBD. So we'll see how that translates. But one more quick segment with John Garcia Jr. We're going to talk a little bit about NIL and some of where he sees this headed. I'm very curious. We had a couple questions from the community. We're going to bring them to John. So that's going to be next on Locked On Badgers. But first, a very quick word for our friends of the show over at Built Bar. Built Bar remains the just number one health source that I use to stay on track, to eat a little better, to get a little healthier, to get healthy protein, 100% real chocolate. And if you know me, in my life, you know I cannot cook, like period, like nothing. 3 years ago, I learned how to make pancakes. I'm 40 years old. So Built Bar is something that I turn to. It's something I go to help me eat healthy, my family eat healthy, my kids eat healthy. Incredible flavors, churro, coconut almond, peanut butter brownie. They're all over the map in terms of the flavor spectrum that you could want. Anything that you're into from a flavor standpoint, they've got it. And it's all 100% real chocolate, pure protein, 17 plus grams, not a lot of sugar. It's not a candy bar, but it tastes like one. That's what makes it so good. You can eat healthy and still taste like you're living life and not on some type of crazy weird diet. And you don't have to go order online anymore. Go to Walmart, get the 4-box variety pack in the pharmacy aisle, a 13 bar box in Sam's Club. They've gone mainstream. You're going to thank me later. Incredible flavors. Built Bar. Go do it for your health. Do it for your taste buds. Let's get John Garcia Jr. back on the show real quick. John, as always, I want to give people the opportunity to, where can they follow you on social media? Definitely somebody that we benefit from your insight.
Yeah, real simple. John Garcia _JR across all social media, mainly on Twitter. I'm a little old, so I'm still figuring out Instagram and some of the others. But yeah, come talk ball at every level with us whenever you want.
I love it. John, we had a couple questions from the community, and I've always had a couple questions with NIL. Where is this thing headed? We're very in the early stages of this. I think the very broad first question, I know we could do a whole show on this, but in 5 years, 10 years, where do you see this headed from a very big picture standpoint?
Well, obviously, there's more regulation on the way, right? We just saw our first NIL-laden NCAA decision. It was at Miami, very small slap on the wrist. I think it was women's basketball. There was like a dinner that a booster tweeted a photo from, and that was kind of the lead into some swift, not so swift action from the NCAA. I think it was April of last year, and the ruling just came in. So, you know, a year is not bad, I guess, by NCAA standards. But there is now the very early foundations of precedent, right? But here's the issue. The precedent is there, but now the rules are starting to change, right? Like in the state of Florida, to go back to Miami, the governor just signed a bill that says schools can participate in NIL deals. Schools can communicate with third parties and players about these NIL deals. It's supposed to be after they enroll, but you know that's a slippery slope. So I think the next logical step is some kind of widespread regulation. What does that look like? Is there a cap? Is there a rev share? Is there more clarity? I know the new NCAA president talked about transparency. You know, is there a way that these deals can become public in principle, as well as, you know, all the nitty gritty details? You know, can we make it more visible, as opposed to, hey, we know, you know, Bryce Young is making several million dollars because he's very good at playing quarterback. Let's not let it be that simple. So I do think we're taking small, very small steps in the right direction in the post Mark Emmert era, thankfully. But it's still going to be very hard. There's going to be loopholes. There's going to be gray areas, public schools versus private schools. Do you have to comply and participate publicly in a lot of these forums. I think there's still a very long way to go, but I don't think you can go the other way. I think that's the biggest bold point here. You can't go the other way at this point. The conversations that are starting to become prevalent are going to become more prevalent, right? You know, it's almost the employee versus student conversation that isn't going away. Is there a middle ground? How do these TV contracts start to factor into all this? Because these numbers are getting bigger, right? Conference realignment is back in the news. How is NIL going to be a part of that? Could that become a bit of a revenue share? How does that work? There's so many variables to look at with this thing that it's going to be really hard to focus on any one area. But I think the broad spectrum is, hey, it's not going anywhere, and it's going to be important to be aligned with something NIL for every single school out there. Mainly it's collectives, maybe like in Miami's case, it's one big booster, not necessarily a collective. Whatever that is at your school, there has to be some type of accord and alignment relative to compliance and the NCAA. There has to be, you got to be on the same page, basically. It can't be a Jaden Rashada Florida NIL situation. That has to be the exception. That has to be, hey, this just didn't work. It's too early. The terms weren't clear. There was no transparency. All of these other things have to be in play for that. That can't repeat itself here going forward, because then people are going to be up in arms and try to push back against it. And I don't see a path to victory from that side of the equation. So yeah, it's pretty broad. I know I've said a lot here, but yeah, it's just not going the other way. Transparency and alignment are really the key factors going forward.
No, it's great stuff. And like I said, we could do an entire show on this. And in fact, that may come this offseason, because I have so many more questions and tangents I want to go down. But I want to go down just one more as time allows on this one. We talked about transparency and alignment. My first thought on that as an athlete is, why should anybody know what I'm making? Like, you know, why should there be a transparency necessarily? And then from alignment standpoint, again, you're going to get into a haves versus have-nots thing. Like, why does Alabama want to align with maybe what Illinois is able to do? And are we going to get back to, I guess the meat of my question as I ramble here is, are we just going to get back to the same type of situation we were in before, where the big schools are going to do what the big schools want to do?
I generally always think it's going in that direction, yeah. Right? It's because the big schools are considered the big schools because they've figured out how to operate in those margins and adapt to whatever is new about the legalities of college athletics and college football in particular. So that's always going to be a part of the conversation. And I totally understand the opposite end of that. Hey, why do I want this all being public? Maybe I'm a bigger target, not only in my community, but my own team. Hey, we're going out to dinner after the game. Johnson's paying, right? Cause Johnson's making six figures, you know, whatever it is, you know, all of those things can really start to affect, you know, just kind of the base level humanity of any organization, especially when you're dealing with young folks, young men and women. It happens with 40 and 50 year olds. Imagine, you know, an 18 year old that's making $1 million before his first game at whatever school. Those are starting to become more prevalent, not common yet, but more prevalent. So yeah, all those things are potential factors. And I think that's why people talk about a cap or some type of regulation to keep it, I guess, within reach for others around said player or program to be reasonable. But again, it's also, this is America. This is a capitalistic society where money talks and your value is what one person could put a monetary value next to. So it's really hard to play both ends of the spectrum. The NCAA is trying, but as time goes on, that's the other conversation. Is the NCAA going to be a thing for these schools in 10 years? In 5, I think it will. In 10, I'm starting to get a little bit less secure in that. You know, it could get to that point because, again, the only thing we know about NIL is that it's not going the other way. That's the only certainty in this uncertain road ahead.
No, that's awesome stuff, man. We're going to cut it there. As usual with John, we run out of time before we run out of questions, but we'll continue this conversation later for sure. John Garcia Jr., as always, thank you for jumping on. Really, really do appreciate the insight. We're smarter because you're here on Wisconsin. We're going to talk again tomorrow in a big game tonight against Purdue. Let's go on Wisconsin.